NetSuite is everything you need to grow all in one place. With NetSuite, you can automate your processes and close your books in no time while staying well ahead of your competition. 93% of surveyed businesses increased their visibility and control after upgrading to NetSuite. And more than 27,000 businesses already use NetSuite. And right now, through the end of the year, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind financing program only for those ready to upgrade at NetSuite.com/Hunter. NetSuite.com/Hunter for special end-of-the-year financing on the number one financial system for growing businesses. That's NetSuite.com/Hunter. All right, I see this brother is standing in front of what looks like a replica of the front of Howard University. I ain't mad at you. Let me welcome both of them. He is Dr. Lee Burge III. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And joining him is Dr. Catherine Pichel Quiroga. Quiroga?
Yes, Quiroga.
Quiroga?
Yes.
Right, thank you. Let me welcome both of you. Dr. Burge is a professor of computer science at Howard University. Dr. Pico is an assistant professor of educational psychology at Howard. There's a new research that they've done that shed light on all of the challenges that are facing Black software engineers. We were just talking about a software program, and that's where the money is. You think about software, you think of Microsoft, Bill Gates, NetSuite, all of these things. How many Black software developers are there that we use day to day? I'm gonna start with you, Dr. Burge.
Yeah, that's a good question. So again, you know, Black people, we make up about 13% of the US population, so we're a natural minority. So, you know, when you look at the tech workforce, we're actually missing in the tech workforce. So if you look at the top like 8 largest tech companies, Black people account for about 6% of that workforce. And then if you drill down and look at just software engineers or technology folks, then the number plummets to even lower than 2.3%.
Dr. Picho, please pronounce your last name for me.
Picho Quiroga.
Picho Quiroga.
Yes.
That's beautiful. What is your specialty? What is it? I know you're an educational psychologist, that's what you teach. Well, how did you get into this space working with Dr. Burge?
Yeah, so actually I'm trained as a statistician and quantitative research methodologist. My content area expertise is social psychology, which is why I got involved in this, because I conduct research primarily examining the factors that contribute to or impact the engagement and the interest of women and people of color in STEM domains. So, you know, I kind of look at all the psychological factors that might impact, you know, people of color.
So knowing the statistics, which we all kind of know,
we've
been kind of, you know, since I've been sitting here, we started Tech Tuesday primarily because I know in the tech space, we're like represented maybe 4%, 3%. Mm-hmm. I know in the VC space, it's like 1%. We get 1% of the funding. You know, there's all, I mean, that's 13, 14% of the population. That's a problem, right? Mm-hmm. And I've been struggling to try to figure out how to, you know, bridge the gap. But I'm, you know, at a loss. So, Sina, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I guess my big question is, you know, to kind of get into like bridging the gap, what are some of the, first, I guess, what age should we be starting to help young kids get into computer science and computer programming? And also, what language do you think is the one that, you know, people should start learning that's kind of future-proof, if you will, that really sets them up? Because you hear these things changing quite a bit.
Yeah, that's a good question. So in my experience, I think middle school is an appropriate age for students. We actually developed a curriculum at the Howard University Middle School of Math and Science, first in the country to do that at the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade level. So I think that's the perfect place to actually expose students there. In terms of language, you know, at the 6th grade level, maybe language is not necessarily what you need to focus on. It's more of the problem solving. Right. Mm. And so there's many tools out there like Blockly coding where you can like drag and drop blocks together to actually, you know, just demonstrate the algorithm that you want the program to run. And so there's tools like Scratch that are out there that I think are useful at that particular age level.
How did you get into it? What's your background?
So again, I'm an outlier. I'm the third. There's actually four of us, including my son. But my father has a PhD in engineering, and he was a professor at the Air Force Academy, and in electrical engineering. And he would bring home computers and modems and all that kind of stuff. And so I was exposed to it, you know. So I call myself an outlier. That's not the norm that you'll see many underrepresented minorities. They don't have that access. So I can't say that I'm in the same shoes as everybody else.
Well, I mean, if we're not minorities, so I think we need to start changing it. If we're going to start talking about coding and programming, part of that is we've been programmed to see ourselves not in these spaces. We've been programmed by society to not see ourselves in these places. So we're the global majority. We invented technology. So that needs to be the first thing that comes out of the mouths of anybody that's educating our kids, is that you are technology. You're technology, your ancestors created it, and you're not a minority. Now, what you talk about access is important, because, you know, I mentioned Bill Gates. I remember, I think he was in the fourth or fifth grade, where they had this whole computer thing in his school that introduced him to this world. And, you know, most 10-year-olds don't get that access. So you did have definitely an advantage. But how do we give that advantage to all of our kids?
Yeah, again, there are a lot of programs out there available and accessible online. And obviously, people can look in their local communities. If they have a community college in the area or a university, there's many different summer bridge programs that they can sign their kids up to. And there's two things. There's exposure, and then there's actually, you know, learning a real skill so that you can become not only a consumer of technology, but a creator, right, mm-hmm. of technology. So we have to look at those things. I think exposure, the earlier you can do it, the better. I mean, you know, you give a little kid a laptop, they'll learn how to use that tablet, you know, quickly. So exposure is one thing, but actually teaching them to be a producer, I think at the middle school level, you know, they have to learn, you know, how to solve problems. And that's the key skill there. You know?
Yeah.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yes, I was actually going to add to what Dr. Barge said, because that's exactly what the research shows, is that when we look at, for example, boys and girls in elementary school, they are pretty much at par. But once we hit middle school, then we begin to see the gender gap, for example, widen when it comes to the physical science subjects. So something's happening in the middle school area that's steering, you know, young girls into more gender stereotypical type subjects. And I think the same could be argued as well for students, for people of color, or for students of color as well. So it's a very critical period, really.
What do we do? All right, tell us the statistics. That's your area. This research came out. Give us the, you know, I know Dr. Burge gave us some, but give us the deep, you know, the scary stats, the stats that, you know, we should really be leaning into.
With respect to access, or with respect to bridging the gap?
This study, right.
Oh, with respect to this specific study. Well, what we actually found out was that the whole issue with lacking access at an early age actually really does impact what happens to you at college. So what we found, that for students who had earlier exposure to computer science education earlier on in life, they were more likely to actually get internships at the college level, and they were more likely to be more confident about their ability to actually be successful looking for jobs. We also found that actually, if an individual, so we also have an issue with lacking access to professional networks, right? So students who do not have or know anybody in the tech field, less likely to feel more confident about being able to do well at these internships. They're less likely to get these internships. And they're also less likely to be successful at the interview process, right? Compared to, but once you hit knowing at least 3 to 4 people in the field, then the number jumps from, I think it jumps an extra 20% in terms of being able to be successful, having that high level of confidence in their ability to actually do well. So knowing someone in the field or having that level of professional network also helps build confidence, because frankly speaking, there seems to be some sort of hidden curriculum, if you may, right? So being able to have an in, so to speak, within an industry or within a specific company, one's more likely to get, you know, what the company is looking for, what skills really are going are likely to be played up in the interview process. But if you don't know anyone in the field, then that's going to really be a problem that might set you back a little bit, at least as far as going in for a technical interview is concerned. And yet the technical interview is really like the gateway for these students in computer science to be able to get a foot in the door. So we definitely do need more mentors. We do need more role models, and we definitely need people of color who are willing to be sponsors for these students earlier on to be able to kind of tell them what the critical skills are, to be able to kind of coach them and guide them. And then once they get in as early career professionals, be able to expose them to line experience. Because there's such a thing actually as you get hired, even though you're a software engineer and you get into this company, but the tasks that you're being given on your job are not necessarily pertinent to getting you higher up the level as, you know, someone that's more skilled. We do need line experience. So they might say, for example, black female, all right, well, Jessica, come on, you know, you can take notes at meetings. So if Jessica, who's a skilled coder, is always taking notes at meetings, planning the next event and all of this stuff, she's gaining administrative experience, but not necessarily the experience that's needed for her to go higher up the ranks as far as coding or, you know, being an executive in that area is concerned. So there is that little hidden thing where mentors and coaches and sponsors are able to help facilitate that as well. Just being able to get them and expose them more to line experience, where when they are ready to go up for promotion, if I'm looking at a white woman or a white man with comparable, you know, you came in at the same time, but if I'm looking at what they've done and what you've done and all you've done has been the administrative level stuff, then you're implicitly or inadvertently being steered towards the administrative track as opposed to the line experience that you need. And so these little hidden things are very crucial, which is why we do need, and companies should really focus more on, you know, exposure or helping facilitate people of color and women as well, by giving them, you know, expanding their professional network, so to speak.
I want to jump in real quick and just ask a kind of follow up on the kind of how you're bridging that gap. And what I heard there, a lot of times I always try to hope that like the public schools could come in and teach the children all the joys of computer programming, when I've learned enough now that that's never going to happen. What I hear there is that you're saying companies should be the ones reaching out into these communities to try to engage, you know, engage young people, because it's better for them in the long run. They get a broader workforce and all of that, that kind of stuff. But what it, and I think what this show really does is it helps move culture, mm-hmm. and culture being the motivating factor.
Yeah.
So could both of you maybe speak to what are the cultural factors that could be used, not just from like private companies, but what are some of these cultural factors that we could use? Because listen, I'm Middle Eastern. I can throw a rock in my community, I'll hit 22 different computer programmers, all right? It's either doctor, lawyer, engineer, computer programmer, that's it. That's all we do. But it's like a thing, like my cousins, they don't speak English. They come here, they learn how to computer program, you know? It's like in the water or something. Mm-hmm. How do we get that to be something that's talked about, that's commonplace?
It's a hard problem. We have to make this cool. We have to make STEM cool.
I was just gonna say, like, what, to Sina's point, I think Sina's raising, that's been the bane of my existence since I've been here. You know, sexy is basketball, rap, entertainment, influencer, fashion, that's sexy. But the day-to-day running of the world, engineering, electrical, you know, it's, and so how do we make that sexy? What, how does it show up for us to make it sexy for the kids?
Yeah, so one thing is to make it sexy and cool, but the other thing is to show how computer science impacts their daily lives. So, you know, mm-hmm. when, you know, you think about hip hop and all these things that came out of the black community, they were done because people were trying to survive. Mm-hmm. They used their skills, they were trying to survive. So if people can, if kids can see how they can use computing, can use technology to better themselves, to better their lives of not only themselves and their family, I think that will make a connection, you know, there to inspire more generations. We need to showcase more African-Americans who are like the Zuckerbergs. It's a shame that I have to use Mark Zuckerberg as, you know, the ideal person that you're trying to aim. I can't pick a black person's name that everybody knows about. I mean, I can name a bunch of them, but these kids won't know it. You know, they've never heard of them. You know, but we need to showcase
name,
more.
So name a few, so that is no longer a mystery. Give us a couple.
Oh, so like Mark Hanna. You know, Mark Hanna, who was the one of the co-founders of SGI, which is the precursor to Pixar films, and you know, it was the technology that created Pixar films. Mark Dean, who was an IBM fellow, who was instrumental on several of the patents on the PC as we see today. A lot of Black people don't know that. You know, so those are just two.
Last name?
Mark Dean. Mark Dean.
D-E-A-N?
D-E-A-N, yep. And Hannah is H-A-N-N-A-H. Mark Hanna. So both of them have the first name Mark. And, there's several other ones, but those are the two key, you know, that just stand out that, you know, little kids need to know about. But, you know, looking forward today, who are those people today? Who are those people that are supposedly cool, got the swagger, as they call it, that these kids can look up to and say, hey, I want to be like that person. You know, we need more. We need to showcase those more on shows like this. You know, Paul Judge is probably one of those out of Atlanta. You know, he's probably a younger guy who's done some big things. He's now moved from technology. He's now VC. But again, these are the kind of names that we need to showcase to show the next generation that, hey, you can do it. You know, representation does matter, right? So we need to show.
It feels like
our faces.
A marketing. There should be some sort of marketing campaign, TikTok campaign. Like, it doesn't, you know, things go viral really quickly. I remember us having, it was a scientist on that did a little TikTok. I featured Erica Buddington, who did a geography lesson using Kodak, you know, Bodak Yellow, whatever it is, the Cardi B song. And, you know, it's just we have to be a little bit more creative, but we're already creative. I don't know why we don't apply that creativity to this, you know. That seems to be the missing link. And maybe, you know, folks who are in this space are a little too much into their own worlds to step back and say, how do we do a better job marketing?
Yeah, I think it's also an underrepresentation issue, you know. So you want those professionals to come out and help. You know, they're trying to survive themselves in their own cultures. But I think if these companies are really serious about diversity, they will incentivize those employees to go out and do what you're talking about, you know, to connect with the kids and connect with the universities and serve as mentors and role models, because that's what it's going to take. You know, building that network so that you can get that hidden curriculum, as Dr. Peachy was saying, that can help you to not only get in, but thrive, not just to survive, but thrive in the space.
Yeah.
Denise Layton on Twitter said, I'm a software engineer. I've always been the minority. I've been in STEM for more than 20 years. I started out in mainframe. My first job was with Bell Atlantic as a software engineer. She said she attended DeVry for computer information systems. So she said, we're out here. In fact, my previous job, I would say there was about 50% of us employed. So, you know, there's, you know, I think it's getting better. The statistics and the Bureau of Labor Statistics apparently saying that it looks bleak, but we're committed. What else can we do?
Well, I'll just add to that. It's getting better, but we have a long way to go because, again, based on those same statistics, we're not creating enough supply to meet the demand. And this is becoming a national security issue.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, so we can't continue to exclude or not do everything we can to make this to make technology more inclusive, because long we keep doing this, you know, we're not going to be competitive globally if we continue with this, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of Iranians are coming to America, getting taught computer science, and going back to Iran to like work for the government. And this is happening not just with the Iranians, but with other countries as well. My mom loves to complain about it. That's how I know. And so that's the thing that we got to fix. We got to get America really good at it. And it's not even a thing where you need a lot. What I love about computer science is you don't need a prerequisite. You don't need to have a family history of a certain type of, you know, it's not like a master plumber type thing where you got to be exposed to it. You get in, you sit, you do the work, you do the curriculum, you can figure it out. You know, I mean, it is very accessible.
Yeah. And also, you know, I think there are some programs like Black Girls Code or something that teaches Black girls to code. So there are some programs that exist out there that probably need to be amplified that much more. But speaking of, you know, cultural change, well, definitely, you know, it would be great if schools could get involved. And when we talk about underrepresentation, it's not just the numbers, the fact that we don't have critical mass in the technical, in the technology industry. It's also the fact that the textbooks really do not really represent the Black, you know, other narratives, right? So it all boils down to, from elementary school to middle school and high school, we need to see more representation as well in the content that is taught, so that the, you know, our minority students, or, you know, people of color and females, are able to see themselves represented as well in the content. And I think that that's really where it needs to start. So when we think about educators, that's probably something that they need to do, but also the industry has to be involved. A friend of mine, my friend Portia, always says that industries need to be able to feed the root, not just pick the fruit. And I think that's true, right? So you don't want to just come and say, oh, well, we're going to go to Howard and, you know, pick some of the talent of Black software engineers. How about feeding into Howard University? How about feeding into schools in urban, high schools or middle schools in urban areas, and trying to get the process started from there, so that you're nurturing potential future people that might be able to work for you? So we want to be able to feed the root, not just come pick the fruit when it's ripe, based on the sweat of professors like Dr. Legand and other hardworking professors at other HBCUs. We really want to be able to see the technology sector, you know, go out into the community and do more than just creating policies on diversity for their HR and EEO, but really actually taking a more hands-on approach with respect to this issue in the communities as well.
That is spot on. Dr. Catherine Picho Quiroga, thank you so much for your commitment, the work that you do at Howard, Assistant Professor of Educational Psychology there. And Dr. Burge, Legand Burge the third, and there's a fourth. Is your son ready to pick up the engineering mantle?
He's showing some of the you know, some of the skills there. We hope he's 8 years old, so we start him early.
That's how you started.
Yeah.
You were gonna say something before I got personal.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. All right. Listen. Thank both of you. Let's stay in touch. And let's keep this going. I really think this is super important. And I thank you for being here on this Tech Tuesday.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Mm-hmm. Pleasure.
Take care.
It's the Karen at the show. Thank you. Nice to meet you too. We'll be right back.
Catch clip.